You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
This is Gun Talk. We're talking about the M1911 45 caliber semi-automatic pistol, legendary in the United States military, a gun that is surrounded by not only great stuff and great history, but also great mythology. So with that said, Mike Musselman.
Yeah. Because, yeah, mythology, you know, the movies, the whole, what came about. So it's interesting to note about the 45. Okay, so let me just...
Okay, hold on. Everybody, as we do this, if you didn't hear me say this before, if you go to the website and you click on the read board, you'll see Gun Talk, M1911 45 caliber semi-automatic pistol. Click on that. And you'll go to, there's three pictures, right? One of the classic 45 loaded, and then two of ammunition, and three, a souped up version. So that's where you'll find the pictures that Mike's going to use in this little discussion.
Well, no, I'm not going to use those. I'm not talking about those. I just sent those to you. Those are just like training aids.
Okay.
You got them set up to the side.
All right.
Got you, Garen.
Go.
So, okay, so coming into the 45, yes. You know, it was adopted by the U.S. military in 1919. But it was, if you go back further, when you're talking about when was the 45 actually being sought after, it was the turn of the century. You know, the turn of the 20th century. Because back then we were still using, in the 1890s and up to the 1900s, the U.S. military was still using the 45 Colt single action pistol. The SAA, the pistol, the revolver. And then it wanted to go to the more versatile, double action revolvers that were already hitting the market. So they started doing some studies, and one of the first guns they went after were, the 38 Long Colt. So now back then, it was actually 0.38, you know, in inches.
Okay.
Today, a 38 special is the same as the 9mm 357. They're all the same size.
Okay.
They all chamber the same. But they're just different lengths, right?
Okay.
So the Army started going with the 38 Long Colt, and then it wasn't until, like I said, John Browning, who, a miracle when it comes to designing guns.
Right.
You know, the BAR and the Browning Heavy Barrel M2. I mean, there's some really huge legacies out there that them. He went to Colt. He actually went to a small guy within Colt and started building this 45. And if you look at the very, very first 45s, they didn't have the grip safety on the back. You know, so when you go to hit it, there's a little, right where your webbing of your thumb and your index finger meet. That's
right.
The grip safety. It just engages it. The original ones didn't have that, but they still had they had a long spur hammer, and they were very similar. The difference was also, if you look at the original 45s, the pistol grip was almost, vertical. It was almost like a 90 degree. So they were kind of weird looking especially when you look at them today. Now they're offset, I think, like 70 something degrees or 80 something degrees. You know, they got that cant back.
Right.
So, and then they put the grip safety in. So they're very similar, again, in design. But then it wasn't until, just like everything else, it was in the early 1900s during the Moro Rebellion in the Philippines. The Moros were these warriors, and they were shirtless. They were little skinny guys. And, I mean, they were teeny. If you've ever seen, like, native Polynesian or native Filipinos, they're very small people, right?
Right.
And so what we were using back then was, you know, the 30-40 Craig, which was the rifle, which didn't have really good performance of it because everything was based off bullet design. And we didn't have the technology we had today with guns and ballistics. It was just coming about. We didn't understand, the deformation and, you know, temporary wound cavities and permanent wound cavities. There wasn't a lot of stuff out there of science on it. And so, and giant buttons was kind of an afterthought. So then the Army, they did a testing, and it was kind of interesting to note that the Army tested a bunch of pistols, Ruger, Savage. One of the particular that they was the Parabellum JP08, which was the Luger, which came about, you know, the same 9mm Parabellum Luger in World War II and in World War I that was sought after by, you know, American servicemen serving overseas. But that actually, they competed that, and they withdrew it. The company withdrew against that, but everybody had malfunctions with this new ammo, Colt didn't, and Colt won, apparently, because it filled the new 45 ACP. Now, you'll see that in the round. So, ACP means automatic Colt pistol, right? So, 45 ACP, automatic Colt pistol. If you see, there's rounds out there, like, you'll see 45 GAP, GAP. You can't shoot a GAP through an ACP, and you can't shoot an ACP through a GAP. Reason being, because Glock automatic pistols, Glock made its own ammo for its own Glocks, for a GAP Glock. But that's another story, another time. Anyway, so the 45 goes about, and it comes out, and then because it was using a 230 grain bullet, which is a very large bullet. To give you an example, if you look at the picture that Max talking about, you're measuring the diameter of the bullet, and the length and the weight. So everything in bullets are measured in grains. Grains are the smallest measurement in the Troy system, right? Pounds and, you know, so forth and so on and so forth. Grains, when you're talking about grains, you're talking about it's 0.065 grams. So every grain is 0.065 grams. So you do the math.
Okay.
And then, or 1 in 7,000 pounds would be a grain. So, anyway, the grains, it's 230 grains, and in the very first pistols that Colt fielded, these bullets were probably, because we didn't have really ways to calibrate or to do a measurement. We didn't have chronographs back then like that, like we do today. But to give you an example, it was probably around 800 to 900 feet per second, okay? So, clearly subsonic. Supersonic being, I think 1125. So 1125 feet per second is supersonic. Anything below that is subsonic. So the nice thing about subsonic rounds is, you know, when they're heavy, they're slow. When they strike something, they have a tendency not to really over-penetrate. And what then they have is, You create two cavities. So here's what the 45 did, which the 38 didn't do. The 38 long Colt and 38s back then, because they're 9mm, were firing a lot faster, probably 1,200 to 1,300 feet per second. So now they're supersonic.
Okay.
So the transfer of energy is going to be the same. So I'm not going to sit here and go into a math class, but if you do the transfer of momentum versus kinetic energy, you know, you'll find that one, momentum is always conserved. Kinetic energy is not, it's dispersed. And also momentum energy is linear, where kinetic energy is quadratically vertical. So what it means is, when you have both, and that's what the 45 had, it had momentum and velocity and kinetic energy, it displaced more of the organs, whereas the smaller round just punched the hole right through you and didn't do that. So the two types of wound cavities is temporary and permanent. What you die from is you can die from two things, or a couple of things. But let's talk about temporary wound cavities. Temporary wound cavities is when the tissues in the organs, being mostly elastic, right, are struck by an object and it penetrates your cavity, and the tissue stretches out of the way because the energy is being released and it's being pushed like a water balloon. If you were to water balloon full of water and you poke it on one side, you would see the ripple go along the side of the balloon, and then is it dispersed? It, depending on how hard you hit it, will determine how big that ripple, that wave, and it could go all the way around. That will be the same thing as your tissue. The more dramatically, of course, it'd be pushed out of the way. When it's a high energy can sometimes stretch the elastic tissue beyond its limit, and then it'll tear, it'll hemorrhage, which is good. And overstretching tissue rupture and sustained damage. That's the nice thing about it, about high energy velocity pistols. But if they're rounded, and that's the problem back in the days, they didn't do hollow points. The rounded tips don't trap that energy and push that energy. They just kind of, it's aerodynamic, so it's cutting through, it's slicing through. So you didn't have that, high cavity reaction to high velocity projectiles, which you would normally see with today's rounds. So let's go back to now we've got temporary wound cavities with low velocity projectiles. So now what happens is the tissue and the body will stretch and it turns to its original state. But the difference really comes into is the permanent wound channel that's created by that round though. Because it's pushing and it's slogging through and it's not going as fast. It's kind of like a snowplow, you know? It's just pushing it along and it's just that sheer torque and that power that's behind it. It's got all that energy in front of that and pushing that snow in front and it can, you know, do a lot of damage. That's what it was doing back then was, the tendency making big holes. And they bled out more. You know, they say, you make more holes in someone, you lose blood pressure, you die.
Right.
That's science. So when they create big holes in these guys, and the bullets weren't per se going all the way through, so all that energy is not being lost. That transfer momentum, is going right into your body and then releasing the kinetic energy. So you're not having, where that fast round, it still has a lot of energy and it's going to pass your body, so nothing is really transferred into your body. So there's where the problem came out, and it was the round. It was the bullet. It wasn't the platform, per se, because, I mean, the .45, in a sense, it is like Matt, we've talked about. It's a cool-looking gun. It's sexy. It's got a lot of history. Hell, I own one.
To guns, though, Mike, it's not really sexy. I mean...
No, it does. It just has a lot of it's one of the most worldly recognized handguns in the world.
Right. The aura of it. But the case you're making now is the aura is due to the round and not the weapon.
It was the round. Yeah. It was not the platform. It was just at the opportunity that it had. You know, the .45 at that opportunity coming out. And so you gotta look at what it was up against. The 38 Long Colt is a sought-after gun now because it's a collector's item.
Right.
I mean, and no one in the right mind would carry one in a duty status.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. So when they're doing this test, and what year are they doing this around?
1904.
Okay, so they're doing these tests. They don't conclude, the guys doing it, that we can all we've got to do is buy different ammunition.
It didn't exist yet, Max. I mean,
ballistics
was in its infancy when it came to determining. I mean, yeah, you had doctors cutting open cadavers, but what they also, when you read the findings today, what you realize is what they were saying was it's about placement. So what was really being strived upon back then also, you know, was where you shot these guys. So it's just like, in today's battles, you know, you look at Operation Anaconda, where the M4 was just criticized beyond belief on the performance where these soldiers were killed in, you know, in this battle. What wasn't looked upon was the bullshit, hey, let's land in a valley and attack a bomb. You know, those tactics, those don't work. Let's look at the green tip bullet, because it's always had a very poor performance capability. It was designed, again, just to penetrate body armor. They weren't wearing body armor, so we got too much over penetration. So we had the same problem that we did when the Army fought the Moros and the .45 came out of it. we were facing the same problem where the M4 was taking the blame. And then just before we did a knee-jerk reaction because, well, we need a better weapon than this thing because this thing's a piece of trash. You know, then what happened was they looked at the bullet. Someone said, whoa, let's look at the bullet. And it came about, hey, you know what? It was the bullet that failed these guys. It wasn't the gun. And then that's when the new M88, 855A1, you know, basically hit the street and was being pushed along to change the green tip bullet. We need a new bullet, boys. And that's what caused us, the Marine Corps, to adopt 262, the first Mark, the Mark 262, and then the Mark 262 Mod Zero, which was the 77 grain black hollow points. We started using those in combat, and then we realized the bullet was too big and it was too heavy to be stabilized by our barrels. So we went out, and that's when we got the brown tip bullets, the AB38s or the AB39s, and then started shooting those. This shows, you know, special operations science technology bullets. We went back to 68 grains, and you build the gun around the bullet. So that's why we've argued in the past, like, why is the 6.5 Creedmoor so good? Because you design a perfect bullet, and then you just build the gun platform around it. You can build a gun. The key is the bullet. You know, let's design a great bullet.
But, Mike, that's from what you're talking about, that is like a 180-degree turn from what you're talking about, the way the 45 is developed. I mean, we're developing the pistol, and then we're gonna and the bullet's somewhat taken for granted. Yes.
Yeah. Then we're gonna develop the pistol, and then we're gonna try and find a bullet that'll fit it.
Right. Right.
So
how many different versions of a bullet for military use are there? One.
Oh shit! Well, no. There's dozens.
No.
There's one. 230 grain, what they call a ball or hard, what they call it back then, hardline or hardball.
Right.
Yeah. But that was their, they didn't have hollow points. They weren't using that kind of stuff
okay.
yet.
All right.
But it was a very slow round. So now people, here is my argument today. So in today, 2018, because of science and technology and all of these other things that we've done, what they've done is they've brought the 9mm, as far as expansion and penetration and all that stuff, to the point where it's just as capable as a 45. Okay? So now when you have a 9mm that is just as capable, almost, you know, negligible, when it comes to all things being equal,
right,
when it comes to penetration and expansion and causing damage in your body, then you got to look at the other factors. And here's always been my case. So if the 9mm is equal and, or just as close, when I say equal, you know, the expansion, I'm looking at it right now from the last time we were at the FBI, the expansion, averages for the 9mm, it retains 90.2% of its weight, and its range of penetration was anywhere from 7.5 to 25 inches. But that was based on different barriers. We're shooting different barriers, through barriers into gel. But its average penetration was 15.45 inches, and it expanded 0.53, so almost to the point where it's a 50 cal, or it's a 45.
Okay.
And what we found out was, you know, the 40 Smith & Wesson, its average expansion was 0.53 as well. You know, so they were the same. But it penetrated deeper. It was, average penetration was anywhere from 12 to 26 inches, and it normally penetrated, in the range of 18.6 inches.
Okay.
But when you start talking about the 45, the 45 had an average penetration from 4 to 8 inches, and its average penetration was 8 inches. So the, what you want is you want something to penetrate anywhere from 8 to 14 inches. And cause you gotta look at, you gotta take into account, clothing, barriers, things like that. You want something that, in that frame. You don't want things on the left side of that because then you're not gonna get, you're not gonna get that wound cavity that you want through the body.
Okay.
And you don't want things penetrating too deep, you know, too, 26 inches because then you're getting that ice pick effect.
Got it. You know, that's I think that's a pretty good way of if you the ice pick effect is when, you know, the bullets, there's too much energy behind the bullet, you know, the design of the bullet, all that kind of stuff. So you got an ice pick effect that you're trying to stay away from, and give me something that's too shallow. Give me something like something a metaphor like an ice pick. Give me a visual on that. What would you call that?
What do you mean?
If
like a bolt. And if I stab you with a bolt, I mean,
okay,
it's not going to go in very far at all.
Okay. All right. So,
a blunt object. If I stab you with the handle of the ice pick, you know.
So the 45 is being developed, and our ballistic, our forensics isn't very developed, and so the 45, just by virtue of diameter, and now some of the modifications that they're making to the chassis itself, for its time, is it a revolutionary firearm?
For what?
For its time.
Oh, in 1911?
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. It changed the whole world. I mean, it was the first time that a reliable semi-automatic pistol was fielded into the military. I mean, up until this point, Mac, you got to remember, in World War One, all of the European nations, except for two, the Germans and the Americans, were using revolvers. You know, the British were still using the Mark IVs and the Mark V Walpers, or the Webleys, you know, break-loaded, you know, pistols. Everybody else was using revolvers. Americans and the Germans came into it with semi-automatic. So it was kind of a big changer in that effect, where, you know, now you had 7 rounds by 6. But the neat thing about it was you had, you know, something that was more reliable than a revolver in those days was hard because you had to keep it in close holster because you couldn't have the environmental effects because the cylinder was open, all the rounds noses were facing out, you know, when they weren't lined with the barrel. So you'd have a lot of problems with the environmentals jamming these revolvers, them not working or getting wet, you know. Again, the ammunition was not the way it was today.
Right.
The 45, because of all these other things, it had the magazine inserted into the handle. Yeah, it doesn't make it waterproof, but, you know, it's better than not the round exposed to the weather.
Okay, so, and what's the total number? 8-round magazine in the 45?
Seven rounds.
7-round magazine in the 45. Okay. All right.
They had to come up with 7 because if they did 6, then you'd get your fundamentalists that would be like, well,
what's the difference?
This effort when we get the same amount of rounds?
Right.
Then if you give me one more, I'm one better.
Right. I can sell it.
Yeah. You know, I can sell that.
I can't sell a wash. It's got to be more. Got it. So that probably extended the length of the hand grip, right? Or there were some modifications. Right. The engineers had to say, look, if we're going to sell this thing, if we're going to make it work, you know, what do we change? How do we do it? Because I've got to have this bullet, not this sales line, this data point to be able to sell this thing and for us to make money. So what do we do, boys?
And so the other thing I want people to be cautious about is there's a lot of people on YouTube these days shooting gel with guns, you know, gel blocks.
Right.
And they're what they're doing is they're not really telling you the whole truth because they're showing you on high speed camera what the temporary wound cavity looks like. And people are like, oh my gosh, remember your body is mostly liquid. It's going to expand. But it's going to also come back. It's elastic. It's being pushed out of the way, and then it's going to come back in place. yeah, it's not going to feel good, but you're going to live. You know, the only, you got to remember, the only quantifiable measurement of wounding is the permanent wound cavity. Okay? And when I say that is because that's what your coroner looks at on the autopsy. That hole's permanent. It's going to stay there. That wound channel, he can say, oh, yeah, here's where the bullet went through it, and this is how he died. It's the only quantifiable. You can't quantify the temporary wound channel, but that's what a lot of people
right.
put
that's
in front of
on TV.
Consumer.
On TV, it looks pretty cool, though.
It looks real cool, but that's not quantifiable. You can't
okay.
put something on that. Okay.
All right, I've got an email question, and it kind of fits in right here. I've been sitting on it for about 5 minutes. Hey, Mac, listening to Gun Talk, just curious. Does the gunner watch the TV show Midway USA's Gun Stories? Do you watch that?
No.
Okay. All right.
Who is that?
Jake.
Oh, no, Jake, I don't. I try, and if I watch it, I would. I stay away from those things because I don't get entertainment from that because what I get is a lot of anger because I see misdirection.
I was gonna say.
I see a lot of misdirection. I see people,
half
not getting the full truth.
Right,
half truths. Quarter truths.
And then he starts to spool.
Yeah, and like I said, I have no, and people come to me all the time. So where this leaves us, and let me finish with this. Where this leaves us is this, and this is what I tell people. Okay, so if the differences are so minute, I look at the other things. I get to carry more rounds in the 9mm.
Right.
I have more range because I have a higher velocity. I have a better ballistic coefficient. I don't have drop off. Okay, my bullet's not going to drop off like this. Because it's got more energy behind it. It's gonna go further. I don't have to manage the recoil because with that gun, again, I have to manage the energy, you know. And so I'm not saying I can't shoot it. I'm saying when I shoot my 9mm or my Glock or something like that, I get almost zero muzzle flip. You know, I can keep my sights on my target and pull the trigger, and I can hit center black as fast as I can pull the trigger. So, and again, so when all those things are put on the scale, that's where it's really hard for me to say, man, let me go with the 45-7 shot, freaking, you know, semi-automatic, and be cool. And give away this 15 round capacity, you know, where I can shoot you further, I can shoot you longer, and get the same kind of effect.
It's actually,
the hole is a hole, right?
When you draw it up like that, there's no comparison, right? Other than your emotional attachment to the 45.
Other than your emotional attachment to your 45. And then if you can't break that, then I'd say go for it. But what I'm trying to always tell people is people ask me all the time, Gunner, what's the best gun for me? The gun that you get to shoot.
Right. Hmm?
That's the best gun. You know, it could be a single shot, whatever. Or it could be a .22. The gun you enjoy shooting is the best gun for you. Now, if you own all 45s, that's great. Again, I'm not here judging you. I'm not saying that you did something wrong. I am telling you why I prefer to stay away from them.
Right.
Because I look at the science of it. I'm not emotionally attached to it.
You look at the science of it, but you also constantly talk about what feels good in your hand and all of that. Okay, let me ask you a few questions. So the 45 is officially adopted by the United States military what year?
1911.
Stays in service, essentially the same weapon with the same
ammo. Still in service.
And stays in service, still in service, with the same ammunition the entire time.
Yep.
Okay.
230 grain ball. It's there are some different types of ammunition, but mostly it's a 230 grain ball.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You sent me a picture of different of of different rounds. When you're talking about target shooting with the 45, what round do you use?
Ball.
Okay.
Ball.
When you're talking for if you were going to conceal carry with the 45, what ammunition would you use?
I use Hornady critical duty. I think it's called something critical.
Okay.
I've talked to you about it before. It's got the little silicone tip in it instead of the nylon. It's got the little red silicone silver casings, but it's called critical duty, critical something, whatever. Critical defense.
Critical defense. Is it hollow tip?
Yes, but it's not really, no. There's a silicone plug in there, and that's a whole other class of how that works.
Okay.
But it does act like a hollow tip once it kind of hits target media. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Talk to us about rail systems and aftermarket stuff for the 45. Same as the other things we've talked about. So the aftermarket thing on a Glock would be the same.
Trigger.
Right.
Trigger systems, barrel systems. You got, of course, I always tell people, the first thing you want to change out when you buy a 45 is the magazine. The standard magazines that come with the 45, the flush, the same ones we had in the Marine Corps Mag.
Right,
remember those
right, yeah.
flush and right. they'd rust. Yeah, it's just horrendous. Get rid of those magazines and then get an aftermarket mag.
Okay. That's the first thing you change. Here's another email. Hey, Mac, I'm curious. When I was in the Marine Corps, we used to qualify with the 45. The offset from the black would be crazy. You'd see all these black squares on paper that served as the offset mark that you had
right,
done.
Where you aim to hit center.
Your aiming point, if you will. That you developed during pre-qual shooting. What caused that? And some of that stuff was crazy. You're aiming at the lower left corner.
No, Matt, I'm telling you, this is why does Gunner make fun of the Marine Corps marksmanship program?
Yeah, why do you?
It's a fucking joke. You know, if you have to ask that question and you're a Marine, then you know what? Man, you had your head buried either in the sand or up your ass.
Yeah, but you never shot.
What do you mean? You shot, you qualified with the 45.
How many days shooting is that?
The first time
you don't
I
know.
Ever
I mean,
shot
you,
and qualified with the 45. The first question I had was, why the hell do I have to fire three rounds as my sighting rounds and then put a black pasty 16 inches away from the bullseye because that's my new aiming point to hit the center? And we're okay with this. Shut up and do it.
That's what Lieutenant McNamara, yeah, okay. Why are we doing it? What is
yeah.
it? Okay.
Because one, when I the 45s that I had when I carried 45, I actually would tear it apart and look at it. My barrel was smooth. There were no lands and grooves in it. It was gone. It was like I could have shot a musket ball through that. It didn't matter. The parts, even though the gun was built to be interchangeable parts, that didn't mean that the parts were interchangeable from, my slide was from 1923, my frame was from 1956, and my barrel was from 1973. No, that's not what it meant, people. You know, I could take my 45 and pick it up and rock it, and you could hear every piece move. It could be like an instrument in a band. Just rock it back and forth. It was, you know, and I would say, you know why officers used to throw their 45s in a, like a sock or something and then put it in their leather snap holster? It wasn't to not keep it dirty. It was to keep it quiet. Even in the holster, you could hear the chip, 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 chip. You hear metal walking on metal. The thing was a joke.
That's true. But it wasn't a joke, right? Our program for sustaining the service life of those weapons was a joke.
Was a joke.
We just bought it. We just bought it, and it's all interchangeable. Here you go, boys and girls.
I want you to aim 14 feet to the right. Why? Well, if you want to hit the bullseye, you got to aim 14 feet to the right. Why can't I aim at the bullseye? Because then you'll be 14 feet to the left. Why don't I just change it and converge it to center? Why are you asking stupid questions there, Corporal?
Do you want to win a stupid prize? Because you're about to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's why we did that stuff. Because we were stupid. And we followed along. Eat grass, sheep, and stay in front of the next one. Don't look up again, sheep.
Okay,
so head down into the field.
The bottom line, though, is so you had the same experience I did. Why? So those weapons were just worn the fuck out, and we just kept using them.
Yeah, they were a joke, man. They were a joke.
What the hell? Here's another interesting question. I can remember in the 80s we used ammunition that I believe was Israelis. It was PZZ ammunition on the lots, which is how you could tell that it came from Israel. I was told that it had more grains in it of gunpowder, and I believe there was an issue of slides breaking and flying into the face of guys that were shooting the pistol. Does Mike know anything about this? I remember that.
Okay, first of all, you got to stay away from reading forms.
Reading forms?
I just saw that. Someone sent me that as a form question, too. There are people on forms, gun forms, are crazy to begin with. That's why I'm not on any form. So I think it's TZZZ. And I've never heard of that. And I know the CCV is Israeli military. That's the head stamp on those. The CCV is Israeli ammo. Now, what was happening was, no, that wasn't correct. They were not plus P rounds. What was happening was, the frames of a lot of the 45s were so old and so worn that they were developing stress fractures or in the frame, where if you take a 45 and you look at it, the weakest part of a 45 is, if you look at the picture, Mac, what's not shown is the ejection port on the right-hand side of the pistol.
Okay.
But on the right-hand side of the pistol, if you look at the bottom part of the frame, the slide, where it meets the frame, underneath the ejection port, in both of those corners, it's a very thin piece of steel. That is the weakest point of a 45. So over time, that energy being absorbed in those corners, and again, the guns not being taken care of and things like that. We had slides break apart being malfunctioned. Now, we blamed it on a lot of things. We blamed it on these new, I've never seen these, we usually fight WCC, which is Winchester ammunition. But the TZZs, Israeli, stuff is plus P. Not necessarily true. Probably still the same. It never really changed, maybe from 900 feet per second with 950. But not really a true statement.
So it could have been simply metal fatigue.
It was probably a combination of everything.
On the slides?
Of everything.
Okay, go over that again. I'm at another picture. What's the weakest point of the...
So if you look at the right side of the 45.
I'm looking at it.
The right side where the ejection port's at, right?
Yep.
If you look at where there's a thin piece of steel underneath the ejection port.
Okay.
That's part of the slide.
Right.
In the corners of that slide, if you look, I'm looking at mine right now, where that meets, that's the weakest part in the right corner and the left corner.
Of the slide.
Of the slide.
Underneath
the ejection port.
Underneath the ejection port. Okay, so how would that lend itself to the slide coming you know, fracturing and then blowing up in somebody's faces. Because, Mike, I know shit remember seeing Marine Corps message traffic talking about this issue.
Yeah.
And so how would that weakness there lead to the slide fracturing and going into somebody's face?
Have you ever seen a gunfire in slow motion? I'll send you a video clip.
Yeah, send me a video.
You can put it on the website. It is a violent action that's being exerted onto that piece of metal. It's an explosion taking place in your hand.
Right.
And you're containing it with a gun and directing it out of a small tunnel. That's what you're doing. I mean, it's literally an explosion.
Okay.
If you were to hold that bullet, that round, in your hand, and I can remotely detonate it in your hand, it'd kick your hand off.
Yeah. Seen it happen.
Yeah. So when we say, how can that happen to a gun? Well, you're having an explosion. You're having a lot of pieces moving. When that slide comes back and it's snapped and broken, it's going to come off the slide, the rail, the guide rail, and it's going to take the path of least resistance.
Okay, let me just tell you, the basis...
It doesn't want to follow the slide. It just wants to go wherever it wants to go.
The basis for my question was... the assumption that there was something in the arresting capability, right, and the recoil, not the side blowing out, that caused that. So it was a fracture of the metal... in the recoil process, not necessarily an explosion sideways of the slide. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That was the basis of the question, because I thought that here's a cool picture that has both sides. No, it doesn't. It was that part of the 45 that was something was wrong with, what is it, the notch on the left-hand side? I want to say, that's my instinct.
The slide lock?
Yeah. There would,
slide lock lever?
Yeah, there was something there that caused an issue.
It could be anything. I mean, right. You're looking at a 45, I mean, any gun, there's every piece has got to work the same every time for it to work. If something goes out of sequence, you can have a catastrophic failure.
Right.
So it's just like anything else. It's like driving your car. It's like driving or flying a plane. One thing goes wrong, one thing can go wrong, and you can be okay.
Right.
You know, the thumb screw come out of your grips on your thing, your gun's still going to be okay. The mainspring failing on the gun, your gun might not cycle again, but it's going to shoot the first round. Your hammer, I mean... Things won't happen, but when your frame or your barrel or your barrel lock, your barrel lock pin or something like that shears, yeah, then you have an issue. You know, because then that energy is not being contained anymore where it needs to be, and it's been exerted somewhere else.
Here's another question. Just so I have it straight, relative to aftermarket and the 45, the same things that Gunner has talked about purchasing in terms of triggers, in terms of barrels, in terms of slide, all apply to the 45 as it would a Glock or a 9mm or any other. Okay.
Now, the difference would be, for instance, there are companies that deal nothing but with Glocks,
right?
Aftermarket products for a Glock. Now, here's the thing. Okay, here's the sticking part. The 45 I got is a Desert Eagle 45 made in Israel. It's a 45. It looks like a 45. It shoots like a 45. It shoots 45 ammunition. The problem is the only parts I can use for it are from Desert Eagle.
Right.
I can't use Colt 45 parts in it because it's not a Colt 45. And I couldn't use, if I owned a Savage or I owned a Smith & Wesson or I owned a Ruger or I owned a Taurus or a Star or whatever it is, you they're not always as compatible.
Right.
So you're narrowing the field of who can provide me this type of barrel or this bushing or this pin or this spring, because they're not the same. Even if you hold them up to each other, the tolerances or what it can do is not going to be the same. Now you can do whatever you want. You can replace it, and if it's good enough and you're happy it's good enough, that's fine. But don't come to me one day and say, oh, it failed and then I lost my right hand. Okay. Yeah. What do you want me to do about it?
Whoa, yeah. Hey. The excuse me. I've got a question for you. You talked months ago, I don't know what we were talking about. It might have been talking about for your wife, ammunition. I can't remember what you called it. And that was part of configuring a weapon so that somebody would be comfortable shooting it.
So I shoot low yield.
Low yield.
Yeah. So they don't have as much powder behind them. So for instance, I have a bunch of like 147 grain, subsonic 9mm ammo. It shoots, I think, at just under 1,000 feet per second, which is subsonic. You know, I get a little more range drop off, but they're good for training. You know, because I don't want, I want to train her to shoot the right way, so when she gets comfortable with it, then I bring her into full, you know, full caliber or full rounds,
right.
And there's not much of a difference. She already has the technique down. She has her grip down. She has her body down, her stance. So she manages it better than as if she was to experience that right off the bat, and then it would be difficult for her to manage, and then she'd lose interest, and then she'd call me an asshole, and then lock up.
Right.
Right.
So is your goal? So is your
always
goal,
practice with low yield.
Got it. So
or you're, smaller calibers.
But you're
22.
But when you're walking around, I just want to link this back to somebody who would use it concealed carry. When you're walking around concealed carry, you're not walking around with low yield ammunition.
Right. No, I'm walking around with the hot stuff, the good stuff.
The good stuff. I like that. Like that. Okay. The any other thing about the 45 and ammunition?
No, and like I said, you, stay away from people ammunition. There's ammo out there right now. It's kind of zombie killers. They're jagged. They're called radically something ammo. And you'll see what I'm talking about if you run into them. Stay away from boxes of ammunition that are flashy. If the box looks like it costs $10 for it to make, that's just going to go in the trash. Then they're going to they don't make that box for free. It's going into the ammo. And if they talk about killing zombies, okay, first of all, wake up people, there's no zombies in the world. There will never be zombies in the world. And by the way, you'll never get to shoot them. Okay, because it's still murder. Because how do you know they were dead to begin with? You know, hell, I've been around Marines after drinking after a good weekend, and Monday morning, the Marine Corps is all zombies.
That's a fact.
So, yeah. So, get ammunition that you're going to use that's priced properly. You don't need to buy stupid ammunition or follow the market. You know, find something that works, and it stay with it. You know, there's no reason to branch out, no reason to try different things. What works, works. That's it. And so I shoot two ammunitions. I have my carry ammunition that I shoot maybe once a year at the end of the year, and then I buy some new stuff. Okay. I don't let it sit for 5 years sitting in my guns. I cycle it through like training ammunition, and then I shoot ball rounds or reloads. You know, I'll get a bag of reloaded 9mm because it's cheaper, 100 rounds. Because I just want to get, I'm looking for just the technique. I don't care what I'm doing because I'm just trying to get the technique down. and I could care less what kind of ammunition comes out of my gun.
Got it.
So just be smart about it. Yeah. Don't buy the reloads are great, man. Buy bulk reloaded ammunition or bulk ammunition for target practice. And then carry ammunition is your good stuff. Like I always tell people, if you're going to go to hunt kudu in South Africa and you spent $25,000 on that trip to hunting, because that's what it normally costs you.
Right.
It's airfare, lodging, guide, the gun, the scope. And you go there, if someone gave you a piece of shit box of ammunition to shoot that kudu, would you do it? No.
No.
You know, $4 worth of ammunition, you spend $25,000 to get here and to shoot that animal, and you're going to spend $4 for 20 rounds. No. No, that's where you want to walk away, dude. You know, like I always tell people, IndyCar drivers don't say, hey, let's spend $2.5 million on this race car and then go down to Big O Tires and see what you can get on sale. No. Everything is priced appropriate. You know, so if you're gonna go out and you're depending on something to stop somebody, and this is on your life or your family or something like that, then do the research, carry the good stuff, because when you shoot somebody, you want to put them down. You want to stop that threat. You don't want to kill them. You want to stop them. Right. If they died because the hole was big and they lost a lot of blood, you know, that was their problem. I just stopped it.
Another email. I've got about, I'm going to read three emails real quick. First of all, this is awesome. I love Gun Talk. You two don't do it enough. It's an interesting dichotomy. Mac as a user, Gunner as an expert. I enjoy the way you guys go back and forth, and I've learned a ton, not only of the history of the 45, also about current TV programs, ammunition, and the mythology that can surround a weapon. Pretty interesting stuff. Appreciate it. Please do it more often. Next email. This is awesome. Mac, keep it going as long as you can. He's not really paying attention to time. Next one.
Yeah, I know.
Next one. Gunner gets fired up. It's really funny. Mac, when he gets fired up, why do you always fuck with him? You know what's going to happen. Okay, let me apologize. It's a weakness I have as a human being. I shouldn't do it, but it's like it's my instinct. When I see a fire, my instinct isn't to put it out. It's to dump more fuel on it as a human being. And I want to apologize to everybody about that. I should be a better person.
You should be a firefighter.
Yeah,
fire continuer.
Exactly, and not an arsonist. By nature, I'm an arsonist. I apologize for that. And then there's one with question.
Okay.
And you've answered this before, but we're doing Gun Talk, so you got to answer it again. I just saw something about 45s coming back into the country. The prices look kind of steep. Is that model of pistol being brought back into the country worth $900, for God's sakes?
No.
Mike, your overall thoughts on those kind of those are pistols. I believe this batch is being brought back in from the Philippines. Is it worth $800?
Yeah. So no. Let me tell you something, guys. There is a warehouse. I think it's in Alabama. That is owned and operated by an organization. I won't name them. That has an immense amount of guns from the U.S. M1 Garand, 1903s, 1917s, 1913s, you name it, 1911s, everything surplus that the U.S. government has. And what they do is they release them every now and then, and they keep the prices up because they release small amounts of them. You know, and these warehouses look like something out of the Indiana Jones where they put the ark in the very last of guns. Okay? There are more guns in these warehouses than there probably are people in the United States. So what they do is they release them because it's a money-making business, man. So they buy them for pennies on the dollar from the government as surplus because the government finds these things like in Redstone Arsenal or right. Albany, Georgia, you know, wherever.
Wherever.
And then so they make money off of them by reselling them back into these programs that are run and managed by civilian organizations. This is a private organization. This is not no affiliation whatsoever to the United States government, even though they're selling government products. And what they do is they keep the price up because they don't want that price to go. I mean, shit, man. It's nice to get, you know, $3,200 for an M1 Grant.
Right.
You know, and they got armorers and people that work there that refurb and take stuff apart to make one, and they'll put new barrels and stuff like on. They call them match and super match and super, super, super duper match grade. And, you know, keep charging more money every time they add super to the word. But you shouldn't pay no more, for a good 1911, you shouldn't pay no more than $700. And if you aren't paying more than $700, one, you're a fool, or you just got more money to spend.
Yeah, you got money to burn. Okay, give advice to a collector then. Give advice to a collector then
go ahead. But you need to understand that the highest point that gun is going to get paid for is you.
Okay.
Collections, you know, I hate the word collectors, gun collectors. Okay. Oh, I'm a gun collector. Gun collectors are only worth what other people are going to pay for.
Okay.
There is no gun market. You know, there's not.
What?
Guns are not being traded. Guns are not being traded on the market.
Are you sure? Oh, you mean like the New York Stock Exchange?
Right.
Something like that.
Where there's actually, I can look real time right now and see what Sony's, one share of Sony's going for. And that's real time. I can pick up the phone
right.
and pay that amount of money and get that. There is no other place for guns. Like, you know, people always tell me, oh, this gun's worth $1,000. Where?
Yeah, what market?
To you it is, because that's what you paid for it. To me, I would pay more than $300. You're crazy. No, I'm smart. You know, what are you talking about? It's $1,000. You know, so that's what I tell people. People buy guns because the name of the gun company is cursive writing on the side of the slide.
Right.
And it makes it a great gun. Well, I'll tell you what. You know what doesn't? You know, if you're paying $1,200 for this special edition, whatever, then you know what? A sucker is born every night. And you just proved it again.
I so knew that was coming.
And guns are the worst when it comes to that. Because the price point
it's emotional,
what they're paying.
But it's an emotional buy, Mike, yes?
Yeah, it is. It's an emotional buy. So the price point is the margin, you know, what the gun maker's making off of the gun. It's not huge, but it's pretty substantial.
Right.
But with the gun, like the guy selling it at your local gun store, the markup is not that great. Some places can gouge the shit out of you, and I have seen some like sell Glocks, a regular Glock for like $750. You're like, what are you talking about? You could buy this anywhere for $450. You know, well then go buy it there. Well, I am going to. Because, I mean, you're absolutely insane. And what they do is they make most of their money on online gun sales. People don't know that. Is online gun sales, gunbroker.com and all this stuff, a lot of the people that contribute to that are these people because they're not selling to walk-in customers. They sell it to online people. They keep the price point down. And every once in a while, they know the sucker's going to lock their door and pay full value for that, full price for the thing. Where they're selling them online, these gun broker stuff or other sales, and they're making money. They're still making money. They're making $100 or something off of a copy, and that keeps them business, man. I mean, if you're selling 20, 30 of those, you know, a month, shit,
hello.
You're doing really good. Yeah.
You would think, you know what, you would think with the number of guns in the country that there would be some kind of market.
No. You don't want one.
You don't want one?
You know, guns are special. Guns are personal. People have
an
emotional draw. You know, some of them grow up watching Bonanza and Wild West shows, and that's all they want is Model 18 whatever Winchesters, lever action, in their collection.
Right.
And they're willing to pay anything. And that's great. But don't come back and tell me that your collection's worth, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, because it's not.
Well, that's my point. That's my point, is that we could create the New York Gun Exchange, and we would have all these little numbers next to all these little
numbers. Oh, yeah, that would go real well right
and
now.
And you would be there in Granbury in a big warehouse sitting at a desk, and you would have to analyze and tag everyone. So you'd make the market. So you'd price everything to the market. It would all come to you.
We'll make the headquarters of Costa Mesa, California, so all the protesters go to you. And then you'll be the front company, and I'll be the shadow government behind.
I don't like that. I don't like the whole idea of the shadow government.
Let's use Costa Mesa as the forwarding address for the PO box.
All right. We'll use Costa Mesa. I do not have any issue with Costa Mesa being that.
Yeah, so when the ricin comes in the packages, you can deal with all that shit. I don't have to.
Okay, a final couple questions. Hey, Mac, I think the wooden hand grips look cool. I'm curious what Mike thinks relative to functional performance. Are they better? Are they worse? I heard him talking about what he did to his Glock hand grip. I'm thinking
that the Glock's polymer.
I'm thinking that he probably won't like the wooden hand grips.
No, that's not true.
Oh, well. Go ahead.
I actually have custom made for my 45, custom made like a dark cherry wood hand grips with the bursting bomb laser engraved in both sides of the grips.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. It's beautiful,
yeah? Yeah, they're cool. But I don't, again, that's not, that gun is not, I'm not going to carry that gun tactically. I'm not going to, it's just, I like it because it's a good gun.
Right.
But I have no expectations of that gun being, you know, like my Glock. My Glock, if it fell out of my holster on the range and landed on the dirt, I'd pick it up. And throw it back in there. If my 45 did that, I'd be like, shit. Like, oh. You know, there's a difference. I don't want to get my 45 dirty. It's pretty.
Okay.
I like it.
All right. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. All right, next question.
My Glock is a user gun. Yeah, it's a worker gun.
And your 45 is a special gun.
My 45 is a display gun.
All right. Next question. Hey, Mac, first of all, I hate for this to end because I love gun talk, but what's the next weapon you're going to do? What's the next weapon we're going to do, Mike?
We could talk about any guns.
I know, but you have to pick
here,
one.
You're the gun guy.
You're Mr. Guns.
No.
You're the gunner, for Christ's sake.
I know. Here's what I'm going to do.
Okay.
I'm pulling out my 20th Century Gun Guide book, and I'm going to open it up, and I'm going to page through it, and where my page stops, that's the gun we're going to talk about.
Okay.
So,
all right, hold
here
on.
We go.
Former Alpha Company, 3rd LAR Marine, question. Mac, I missed a few shows, and I joined late, but listening to you guys makes me want to come back. Two questions. One, relative to handguns, does the gunner subscribe to one gun for every job, or does he believe there are different tools for different jobs?
Okay, so that's a great question.
Okay, hold on. He wrote a little bit more. Let me just read it since he took the time to write it.
Okay.
I prefer one platform / caliber for accuracy and or another for active or combat shooting. I have always felt I was significantly more accurate shooting a 1911 when I had time to slow things down. I grew to prefer a 9mm platform through active shooting and law enforcement work. All right. Go ahead, your answer.
Yeah. So my answer is, I have a gun for every occasion. Seriously.
And for
people that sit there and say, well, that's craziness. No. And here's why. When it's cold out in Texas and I can wear a coat, I'll carry my Glock 22 with me. Or I'll carry my longer slide, Glocks. When it's spring out and I can take my shirt and untuck it, I'll have, my Glock 19 or my Smith & Wesson M&P Pro or, you know, something smaller frame. My Glock 34s and my Glock 43s, you know, something smaller frame. Cause it's hot out. I don't want to carry this big bulk gun. When it's really hot out and I am wearing a t-shirt and shorts, I stick my Smith & Wesson, 38 revolver hammerless in my front pocket, my air light, and stick it in my pocket and carry it in my pocket. Because I don't want something on my hip. If I'm out at dinner and I'm wearing a starched white shirt and jeans and it's tucked in, I'm not carrying a gun on my hip, you know, and I'm not stupid to think that I'm going to put one in my boot because that's just in movies. But I got it in my front pocket. You know, I got an air light hammerless 38 or my air light hammerless 357 if I'm feeling a little beefy that night. So I got a gun for every occasion. I have a gun in my house that it's by my nightstand that's a Glock, it's another 40 Smith & Wesson, but I fire frangible ammunition through it because I don't want to go through the walls. You know, because I got other people in the house. I don't want to cause more harm or damage than I necessary.
So you have like a wardrobe of guns. And every one of them has a specific purpose. You have guns that are for going out and defending yourself and others should the situation arise. And then you have guns in your home used for self-defense that are tailor-made for that. So you have a gun for every wardrobe event and every occasion.
Yeah. Yeah, my guns at home have the tactical light clipped onto the tactical rail, so they're already on there all the time. They have an extended magazine. The two of them have, rear-mounted, sights on them. One has a Leupold, dot, and the other one has a Trigicon arm on. One of them is suppressed. Subsonic ammunition. Maybe I don't want to wake my daughter up in the middle of a gunfight in the front door of my house.
What was that noise last night? Nothing. The dog was just moving around. What are these like?
There's police tape still out front.
Why is there all that police tape out in front? Oh, they're just.
Maybe I don't
want to
wake up
your
the neighborhood.
You know your dad. Oh, he's just. They're just doing some training here at the house, and he's just helping. Oh, that's such that's so nice. He is. He's really a great dude.
I'm considerate. I'm a considerate person when it comes to shooting you. I think about others. I don't want to wake up the neighborhood. So if you break into my house in the middle of the night, I'm going to pull this Glock 22 out with 40 Smith & Wesson with sub, it's got subsonic ammunition, it's got a suppressor on it, and it's just going to go, and my wife probably won't even wake up in the room. She's like, what was that? I was farting, dear. I'm fine.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Oh, it's okay. I'm going back to sleep. All right, you go back to sleep.
Yeah.
Have a good night.
Call the police, yeah. Yeah. Guys, keep it down. My wife's asleep. I don't want her to know. No, and I say it's jokingly, but yeah, I changed it out.
Okay. So a gun for every occasion. Second question. Has Gunner ever shot or seen one of those crazy handmade 1911s from the Philippines?
Oh, yeah. The ones that they, it's actually shot a documentary that these guys were making these things. Handmade. Now, I don't know why you'd want one. I mean, other than the fact that it'd be like, hey, this one is made in the Philippines. You could say that any gun. If you said it convincingly enough, people would be like, oh, okay. But, yeah, I mean, it's cool. I mean, it's neat. I wouldn't own one. I just don't see a need for it. Pay that kind of price. If someone gave it to me, So if someone listening wants to buy one from me and send it to me, go ahead.
But do that after you buy the 4.5 million set of
45s. I really want the Meteorite 45.
Yeah, made
so
from Meteor.
If all of you guys collectively, you know, jumped in on that, that'd be a great gift. And I'd even give one to Matt. We could, like, have it as pairs. When you mean you have one and I have one.
Just wait. Here's another email. Yeah, if you, we're not bullshitting about that either. That's, he came on one day and said, and I said, well, what do you want for Christmas? And he goes, nothing. Christmas is every day. You should never, and then you have to get the lecture. Valentine's Day is every day. Christmas every day. You always say, I love you.
Mother's Day, Father's Day. Yeah.
So he does that. He does that little routine he does. So you just sit there and listen. Okay. Then he says, but if I was going to tell you, and he tells this story, and he's like, look it up, Mac. And I, so I did, and it was no bullshit. Some guy got chunks of a meteor that's, what, billions of years old, and he, and he
made two 45s out of the same meteor.
He made 45s out of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's
I mean, a meteorite's metal, it's metal.
Yeah.
You know, it just, it comes from space. It's been, these guns were floating in space for a billion years.
Yeah, a billion years. Okay, not a million, a billion years.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they like they went by the Starship Enterprise before General Neller got on
way before.
And tried to command it.
Way before.
Okay. The, all right, here's another email. Mac, I was part of the generation that used those black squares to offset my aim. What did the gunner say when he was a Lance Corporal and he started asking about it? Yeah, what?
I was told to shut up.
Yeah, that's not really.
I mean, seriously, I remember asking. It was a corporal, a PMI with the pit helmet and everything,
right?
And we were there training, and I said, "Don't you find this stupid that we got to put a black pasty? You know, and you look at everybody's target, and they're all different." One be down in the bottom right hand corner, one be down at 6 o'clock.
Hold on, hold on.
None of them are like,
I've got another, I've got another email about this, and because it'll help you make your point. I'm listening to you talk about these black pasty things on targets for 45. Do you mean they were just outside the black, maybe an inch or two, and that was your aiming point? Could you explain, Mike?
No. So that target. Okay, so the target, the bullseye target was, I think, 3.5 feet wide and maybe 4 feet long. The paper that thing used to sit on. It was a big target.
Yeah, big target.
And you would shoot 3 to 5 rounds as your sensing rounds. Like, you'd aim straight at the black and you'd go boom, 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 boom. And then you'd go down range and you would notice that your group is way up in the right-hand corner. Like, all 5 rounds. And you were aiming here, but you were shooting here. So what you would do is you would offset. You take a black pasty, and from the center, you would go then down all the way to the left, the same equal distance where your thing is at the same angle, down off to the left. And now you would aim low left, and you'd hit dead center. Bam. So I'm, like, aiming where his, like, if he would have thrown his purse down off his right-hand side, and I'd aim where that would be on the ground, and I'd be shooting him dead center in the chest. But everybody had a different aiming point. Everybody. So every gun was completely different. And God forbid, I think, if you banged it on something, because then your aiming point changed the next day. You're like, son of a bitch, I just did 2 days, and I've been aiming at this now, and damn, in the freaking bottom right. What the hell's going on? And like I said, I took it apart one day, and I pulled the barrel out, and I looked it through the light, and it was smooth. There wasn't not even a hint of rifling or glands down that barrel. So in my mind, I'm thinking, you know that poor bullet, when it fires, it's going bang, 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 all the way down that barrel. You know? it's just smacking each side of it. So when it comes out, the thing is just like, it's like throwing a football with your left hand if you're right arm, if you're right handed. Trying to throw a spiral with your left hand if you're right handed with the football. That's what the bullet looks like when it comes out of the barrel.
Honestly, you can't make it up. Look, there'd be people that would be hitting the frames. Like you'd fire that three shot group, and all of a sudden you'd see sparks, and you're like, "What?" hit the frame. And the PMI, the coaches, they saw it every week. Like, oh shit, here we go. So when you see guys wearing I was a pistol expert, like from the 70s and the 80s, right? Until we went to the 9mm,
well,
that's like legit.
Okay. Let me, just to put it again in perspective, boys and girls, if you've never been to Marine Corps rifle range, okay, you shoot from the 2, the 3, and the 500 yards, right?
Right.
And each yard line is elevated, so you're like on a berm. So you're like up on a small little hill, maybe what you think 10 feet high off the where the ground is.
Yeah.
I mean, you're up there. Yeah, it's about 10 feet. You're about 10 feet up. So as you go back, you go down to this low ground, and then you come up on the berm, and now you're on the 300 yard line. Then you go down to some low ground, and then you come up on the 500 yard line. And the reason for that is so that, you know, you have a better field of view all the way down at your target, because your target's pretty high up there too. So what's crazy about this is if you're at the 200-yard line and you're shooting, take a minute to look around you. And I say that because this is a rifle range. But yet, if you look closely at, like, the benches and the ground around you, it looks like a battlefield. It looks like a beaten zone to a battlefield. There's bullet holes everywhere. There's bullet holes in the center where the guy stands and makes all the commands from, the center shed. And there's not even a target downrange from that thing. You know, there's a target maybe 20 feet to the left and right of that. But yet there's bullet holes all over. It looks like freaking, you know, the OK Corral. How does that happen? There's bullet holes through the shitter, and that's center line. You know, how does that happen? Because
how does it happen?
We aren't as good as we think we are. I mean, for God's sakes, it's a rifle. You're aiming at a black, you know, circle that's probably about 3 feet wide. You're 6 foot target, a 6 foot target, and you're missing and hitting the shitter that's 600 yards to your right.
Wind, too much wind that day. Hey,
yeah, right.
What's the range if you left Margarita, and what's the range that 5th Marines used to shoot on? Wilcox? What's the range back there?
Yeah, Wilcox is behind Margarita.
Okay. We're shooting on Wilcox. How many shooters would be up if we're shooting as a battalion?
On a full day?
On a full day.
I think there's 75 shooting positions.
Okay.
75 targets.
A coyote runs into the impact area, and it wasn't even pre-qual day. So it was just dick around shooting day. Okay?
Yeah.
Right. And I don't know what percentage of the 75 to this day took aim at the coyote. I do know this, nobody hit him. Okay? Now, and the coyote starts moving.
Looks like a John Wayne movie. Rounds erupting by him. And he's like, dance, coyote, dance.
Right, right. Except, you know, in that movie, they're not trying to hit the coyote. On this, and I know this, people are going to say, oh, this is so inhumane, blah, 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 blah. I'm just describing you something that actually happened, right? And the guy in the tower is yelling, ceasefire, ceasefire! Then everybody stops. Nobody hits him. Nobody hits him.
So, I'm at the White House working one day as a division gunner.
Explain White House.
It's the headquarters for the 1st Marine Division. So, this is the White House where Vandegrift, you know, had his office.
Okay.
Right. So I'm in my office, and I get a phone call. And it's someone from Margarita, from headquarters battalion, and they said, Gunner, are you busy? No, what's up? Well, they need you down at the range at Margarita. I said, why? I'm not a range officer. And they said, no, but they need you because someone from headquarters battalion apparently shot a blue heron on the rifle range. And now the EPA, the bird study guys, the Audubon Society, I mean, everybody's just sending there because they're endangered species. And I'm like, shit, on my way. I drive down there. The rifle range is in a C-spot. There's this carcass of this blue heron has been taped off. And so it's like laying there. It's been murdered in the middle of this range. Right?
Well, wait. Where was it on the range? Was it in the impact area? Was it?
No, it was in between the 200-yard line and the target. So it was down that low ground.
Okay.
And so I'm looking at this, and I'm like, okay. So we go down to the target points, and I say, all right, give me the swath of targets. And it's like 8 target points. And I said, I want first, second, and third relay guys, everybody off the range. Go ahead and compute. Go ahead and do this. We take them up to headquarters at the time, turn in the rifles, and we stand them out in the hallway. And I said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to bring you in one at a time. And I'm going to ask you some questions. This is your time to be the truthful with me, because I will find the truth. So if I have to find it, and it's not given to me, I'm going to be upset, and I'm going to make sure that you're prosecuted to the full extent of the law, and I turn you over to all these wacko liberal guys that just want your head on a spit right now. Okay? So we bring these people in here, and it's funny, because, you know, I'm listening to them, and I say, you know, because they were shooting in a sitting position, and this bird had got murdered. So you actually have to dip your rifle down, like, you know, 15 degrees. I mean, you have to purposely shoot this. It's not like it was in the way.
Right? So it wasn't flying. It wasn't like when Randy Johnson exploded that bird at where Dodger Stadium.
Yeah, no.
It wasn't
this
that
thing
one?
Was walking this on the left side of the range.
And murdered.
In the little swamp area and murdered.
All right?
So, again, I'm talking to these guys, and these guys were like, sir, I just was firing, and I looked over, and I heard the thump sound of a bird getting shot. I knew what that sounds like from a bird hunter and all this crazy shit. So finally, a kid talked to it. Kid actually walked in there and said, sir, I did it. You know, I was stupid. I didn't mean to. I shot it, and that's it. I said, okay. So I walked out in the hallway, and I said, all right, everybody get out of here. You know, so now everybody that didn't get talked to knows who the damn people are, you know, who actually did it. So I told them, I said, hey, listen, what's going to happen is nothing, okay? I just wanted to hear it from you. I wanted to hear it from somebody. So I'm really pleased that there's actually someone here that's actually truthful. So we're going to do our best to protect you. And I think they did NJP him. But other than that, I mean, what could have happened, I mean, a lot more. Because, I mean, it was a huge deal, dude. The Marine Corps had to pay so much money to some society that was, you know, because not only was it a murdered bird, but it was a murdered tagged bird.
Mm-hmm.
So it had, like, 4 tags on it from 4 different societies, like a radio tracker. I mean, it was a big deal. Like, shit.
See, these are the kind of things that gunners do, okay?
No, what I did was, my advice was to the lieutenant was, hey, listen, if this ever happens again, quickly cut the leg off, take all these rings and tags off, go find another blue heron, and get that shit on him. And then dispose of the body.
How did they know? How did they know how did they know that it was murdered? Who reported the murder?
Had a bullet head through its head.
I know, but it's just a dead bird.
Right,
we all see dead birds all the time.
No, Because everybody witnessed it. Everybody's watching this blue heron like walk slowly on the edge of the left range.
What's a blue heron look like?
It's a big, tall-looking, stork-looking bird, but blue.
Oh, it's not like a bluebird.
Oh, no, shit, this thing's like 4 feet tall.
Oh, shit. That is a
can't hide this. No, this ain't going away. I mean, a bluebird or a blackbird, yeah. Sparrow?
I was going to say, why are we getting in trouble for, like, a bluebird getting killed? That's ridiculous.
Blue heron.
Blue.
And that's not 4 feet. It's like 3 feet. But, yeah, a blue, huge bird walking on the side of a restaurant. People weren't going to pay attention to it. And all of a sudden, like you said, people were watching, and all of a sudden it just went, bam, and his head went, and his feathers went up, and his wings went, and just fell on the ground. And everybody's like, she's far. Yeah.
Oh, my God. You know what? And so I wasn't shooting on the relay. I was watching the coyote run for his life. And luckily he lived. Cause the world doesn't need one less coyote, for God's sake. But,
I would have shot at it.
I
shot a rabbit on the range one time.
we're sitting there.
He was sitting. None. I was at the 500. He was like at the 300. He popped his little head up and I was like, wow. Right in the kisser, man. And I looked left and right to make sure no one saw me do that. And of course they did. Because they were looking at the same rabbit.
But then everybody who was shooting got dogged. Non-shooting fucks. A coyote running around for 15 minutes back there. Y'all can't hit it. I will tell you this. One of the funnest times I ever had shooting, qualifying in the Marine Corps was at Quantico. And I was with Dave Furness, Paul Kennedy, Duffy was there. It was like the tactics group, and we had a break for some reason, between classes. Mm-hmm. And so they scheduled all of us to go to the range. Dude, I laughed my ass off the whole time. You know, Marines, especially infantry Marines, talking shit and shooting, come on, they could do it all day long. And when you combine the two, especially, and then on qual day when somebody's not shooting well and everybody's watching them and making comment, it is funny as shit. It is funny as shit. The range, the range, the place where legends are made. Email, hey, Mac, what's the highest ever gun, the gunner ever shot? Yeah, Mike, what's the highest you ever shot?
In the Marine Corps rifle range system?
Yeah, Marine Corps rifle range system. The conventional system that we would all know and love.
The highest ever shot is I shot a 249 twice.
249. That's
right. Dropped one point.
Where'd you drop on those details? Where did you drop the one round?
Actually, I screwed up. It was the first round I ever fired. On the 200, it was like, screwed that up. I hit a 4.
Two on both times?
Yeah, both times.
Holy shit.
And then the one time I had a possible going all the way back, and all week I'd been shooting, I was shooting clean on the 500. I went back to the 500 and I forgot to put my 500 dope on. And then the first round I fired, it was a miss. And even the range officer at that time, I was a sergeant, I think. The range officer, she's far, drove his little freaking wagon down there. Because he'd been shooting me, he's watching me shoot all week, too. He went down there to personally inspect the part. And then he comes all the way back. Comes walking right up to my target point. We're still laying, sitting there. And he looks at me and goes, let me shoot your rifle, sergeant. I look to my rifle and he goes, fucking idiot. And I looked back, and I was like, what? And I was like, shit. And then after that, I shot a 245 that time. But, yeah, I was like, it was always mistakes, But it never appealed to me. I was like, what? Because it's so damn easy, dude.
You're like gunner in the making. How can you pull a stupid bonehead mistake that the rest of us make?
Because I'm human. Even though you guys think that I'm immortal, I'm not, man. I'm mortal like you guys.
I can't believe I just teed that
up.
Teed that up for your dumbass.
Bleed just like the rest of you freaking morons.
All right.
August 2nd, man. I got my invite. I'll be there.
You got your invite? I haven't got mine yet. I just talked to him yesterday.
I got my parking pass in that invite.
Oh, yeah, it's all in there, huh? Yeah.
Yeah. Distinguished guest.
Yeah, they don't even have no idea what distinguished means. The Rudy's fired. F-18 man's fired up about going.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. We'll see if the protocol officer for 2nd Marine Division has a sense of humor. I know her. I don't know if she remembers me, but I know her. And when I RSVP'd, I wrote in there, I said, and my lunch diet will consist of my restrictions are, da 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 da, and then my seating arrangement restrictions are, and I put those in there, and I said, and please make sure that they have sparkling Pellegrino water, because I don't drink tap water, waiting for me as well. And, you know, I put all this stuff in the email. I think she'll remember me once she's that, like, oh yeah, I know this guy, Gunner.
Does anybody know this idiot?
Because Martha, who was the protocol officer for 1st Marine Division when I was up there, Martha would always try and kick me out of the office. Get out of here, Gunner. But she couldn't do it without laughing.
Yeah.
You know, it'd always make her laugh. Like, oh, you know, walk up there, and I'd say, hey, Martha, let's go ahead and close my schedule up for today, and I don't want anybody visiting me. She's like, get out of here. You know? And you can send my driver home today. I don't need him today. But
see, Mike, I think this all goes back to when you got electrocuted during the march up.
Well, I would tell her, and I'd say, Martha, and next time I have you pick up, because the aide would be in there. I'd say, Martha, next time you pick up my dry cleaning, make sure that you get my wife's stuff too, because she yelled at me yesterday. She's like, Gunner, I'm telling you one more time, get out of here. And she couldn't do it without laughing, though, because I always made her laugh.
Mike thought he was a general officer. And it all goes back. I don't think you got, like I said a week ago, you didn't get nearly what you could have got out of that being electrocuted thing. Okay? You did not. And I'm, you know what? I've got to, I'm going to write myself a note. I need to get that audio and play it for you. Because Mike said, Duffy White can tell a story. He's funny. Okay.
Yeah. Funniest man I know that can tell a story. Yeah.
Yeah, he could tell. And he's got that funny Southern draw, and he says, yeah. We were watching Electricity Arc on Electricities, and I don't know what he was doing, but he reached up. What were you doing? When you got electrocuted.
Well, no, it was arcing. So it was arcing. We didn't know it was arcing. We were inside because it was bad outside.
Right.
But so it was dark out, it was bad, it couldn't see anything, and we had bad radio communications.
Right.
It was like something. And then there were some popping noises, so I was like, what the hell? So I opened my hatch, and I looked up, and there was nothing there, so I reached back, and we had two antennas that went behind the bustle rack, behind our turret. And as soon as I reached back, like Frankenstein, these two blue lines between the things, like, whoosh, and it was like my hand was right in there. It was like, and I just remember like looking, my arm was like in between. I didn't touch the antenna. I was touching it in between, but it like the two blue lines came, the two blue electrical bolts came out from the antenna. Like, and it looked like it said Frankenstein movie.
And then you get knocked out, right?
Yeah, it knocks me back straight down. I just fall straight back in the turret. And I'm laying there. And that's so funny. You know, Gunner's probably dead, and this laugh at him moaning. I'm sitting there in my seat, you know, drooling on myself. And then I came to, and Duffy, he could tell he was kind of like concerned, and then also when I came to, he's kind of like that in between, like getting ready to laugh.
Right.
Like, what did you just do? I'm like, what?
That's how he happened.
Who am I?
That's how he talks too. What did you just do? The way he tells it, he goes, I thought he was dead, and then he starts groaning. And at that point, I think you're right. He did think it was funny after he heard you groaning. He's like, oh, he's all right. So now we can have, as soon as, right, and that's kind of protocol of the Marine Corps. As soon as you know somebody's okay, everybody okay, and we're just, we might have hearing damage or some other stupid thing, but it's essentially okay. As soon as we make sure that's going on, then it's funny. Then it's time to make jokes about it.
And if it's a medevac, as soon as you're medevac, like you're leaving, as you're leaving on the stretcher, then we laugh about it now.
Right.
Yeah. But there's always humor.
But he, Duffy, he's pretty funny. Yeah. You should listen. I'd be curious to know, you know, your take on the march up. You should listen to it.
I was there. Yeah.
I know. But I'd be curious to hear, I mean, he had, I mean, not to switch gears, but, you know, we talk about, you know, you see the march up and you see like the map and you see this arcing line.
Oh, dude.
It's not even close.
We stood all the way there. And then I made a makeshift shower. I don't know if you talk about that. So I made a shower. We found, we pulled in this university. And since all we've been doing now is taking like sponge baths from a freaking water jug. And those were far and few between because we didn't have a lot of water.
Right.
So I find this, we get the spot, university, and we pull our vehicle in, and in this little corner, there's this water dripping from this pipe. And, but it's like, the way it's way over here. So I'm like looking at it. And it's a good pour. It's a good steady pour. So I'm like, So I get up and I go find some more pipe and then I bring this. And I make this look like a shoots and lab type thing, you know. I take some pipe here and I do this and I redirect that and I do this. And my guys are watching me like, Gunner's crazy. You know, what is he doing? And then I pull my poncho out and I make a shower curtain and I bring my soap out and I do all this stuff and I get a new pair of candies because, you know, I had changed my candies about a month and a half now, it seems like. So I'm like, oh. And I got my razor out, and I go in there, and I take a shower. And when I say a shower, I'm taking a trickle.
Right.
But it's still enough to get my body wet, to lather up soap. The feeling of having soap on your body, you know, after months of not, it's an amazing euphoric experience. It's just an amazing new experience. Like being reborn again. I mean, it feels like, oh, feels so human again. So I take a shower. I put these new candies on, and, you know, I'm now washing my old ones because I got now a laundry room where my shower used to be. So I'm washing my candies, and then I hang them up to dry. I grab an MRE, and I kick back on that, and then I'm just sitting there on the stool, and Duffy comes up, and I'm like, you stink. You know, actually, all of you guys stink. You guys are pigs. You know? Well, come into this civilized world that I am now part of, you know.
Well, wait a minute. Like, why didn't you shower?
We're not taking
shower last? I mean, isn't
because they didn't want to take a shower in it. They were scared that the water was like toxic. Well, there's still this chemical, the chemical Ali thing, you know. So they were so afraid of everything. They shied away from every opportunity to get clean. I ain't brushing my teeth in that water. It could be chemicals in it. You're like, oh, whatever.
All right, where are you headed today?
Dude, I took a bath. Well, I had to convince Duffy to take a bath when we were at the crit in Saddam's private pond.
Oh, hey, that
could, like, I'm getting naked and getting in this pond, guys. They're like, what? Yeah, I'm going in. And then there's like six of us. We look like albino dolphins with our butts sticking out in the air in the water, you know, every once in a while. We're like, hey! We look like manatees. That's what we look like, white manatees, albino manatees swimming in the pond. Soap everywhere. it was so freaking funny. I mean, everybody after a while was in there. But then, again, in there you had the 29 palm front hand, so your lower arms were all sunburned, your face was sunburned. But the rest of you is like green white.
It's the worst tan. It's the worst tan in the world.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like white. I mean like underside of the belly of the whale, like white gray. It's terrible. Terrible.
Yeah.
All right. All right. You got any big plans for the rest of the day? What are you doing?
No, I gotta go pick up my dog's medicine, and then I gotta call this window guy and see if he can come out and put the thermal screens on the front windows.
Ooh.
You know, to keep the sun out. Yeah, we got on the back windows. We just now need to put them in front of it.
A thermal screen?
Yeah, it reflects the energy from the sun.
So the screening material does that. It's not something else that goes on the outside.
No, it's just a screen.
Wow. What kind of medication do you have for your dog?
Oh, like the regular stuff, the flea and tick and the heartworm stuff.
Did your dog do firecrackers, fireworks well?
No. We got him a thunder jacket. Actually, he has a thunder jacket. Have you seen a thunder jacket for dogs?
No.
So it's kind of funny. If you look it up, it's called a thunder jacket. It actually encases his body. There are thunder jackets for dogs, or a thunder coat or something like that. But it encases his whole body in this stretchy, contracting material that kind of feels like he's being held and hugged. Gives him more sense of security. And it works. It works really well.
Really?
Yeah, it works really well.
They're cheap.
So,
they're like $20.
Yeah, they're not bad at all. I mean, he's a big dog. He's probably like $20-$35 or something. But they're nice. You put them around their body, and he looks funny. He doesn't like wearing it because he knows we're laughing at him.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, he gets a little upset.
But, I mean, for instance, my two dogs, Jack and Joe. Today's Joe's first birthday, by the way. Big day. So, Joe... He looks around like, what's wrong? It has absolutely no effect on him. And Jack is sitting there panting for 2 hours.
Yeah. This thunder jacket takes that away. It really does.
It does.
That's the way Blitz was. Blitz would get up, and he'd go into the walk-in closet in the middle of the bedroom in the dark and then hide, like under the clothes. But he acts like he doesn't bother him. He does not, like... Oh, shit, I'm scared. He just gets up and is like, excuse me, and then he goes and cowers. He tries to maintain some dignity as a big dog.
He doesn't want to act like a little dog, be emasculated like a little dog. So it works.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, because I was, you know, it started, right? You know, all of a sudden, now, like in the evening, boom, you'll hear it. He comes running to where I am, right? And he tries to get me to pick him up. I'm like, get off me, dude. It's the middle of the day. I'm not picking you up. Yeah, I'm not holding you. And, but he's just terrified of it. And then, you know, and then I live next to the Orange County Fairgrounds. And so the fair is going to start here in the next couple weeks, I think. Or it's maybe after the 4th of July. And then they have fireworks every night. And he doesn't go for it one bit. Not one bit. So, and then I don't care about him so much. I care about me. And then he's like always like screwing with me while I'm trying to watch the Yankees. So it pisses me off. So Thunder Jacket. All right. I'm on it. All right, man.
Yeah. Thunder Jacket.
All right. We're not going to talk to you till Monday.
No. Let's see. Briefly, we can talk Thursday.
Okay.
No, because Jeff doesn't come in until late afternoon, but I think Friday, I can't talk because I got a lunch meeting.
Okay.
So
Thursday.
Wait, let me see. Well, when's my dental appointment? That's next week. So tomorrow, you can't. Jeffy B, yeah. So Friday, I can't either. So Thursday, yeah, Thursday we can.
All right, we'll talk to you Thursday. All right, thanks for all the gun talk.
Yeah. And then, as we know, go Sox.
Go Sox, exactly. Go Red Sox. They got out of Seattle with a win. So, there you have it. The Gunner. Mac, you fucked up Gun Day, damn it. I did not. That was entertaining Gun Day. We covered a lot of different ground. And then I'll edit it for the gun portion I'll do the normal hour, then I'll do a second one that's just only, you know, dedicated to our gun talk. So, anyway, the 45. Mike sometimes can't talk about the 45. Yeah, he struggles because of all the mythology that surrounds the 45. Yeah, he can't talk about it like a grown-up. Like, okay, the 45, this, then this, then this, then this. Like when he does the Glock without emotion, you know, he could just talk about the Glock. Can he do that with the 45? No, he can't. Why can't he? I don't know. I don't know why he can't. He's not mature enough. He has this underlying hate for the 45 because of all the anxiety that it's caused him in his life. I'm not exactly sure. But he did good today. I think it's pretty interesting, though, when you look at the evolution of firearms and any weapon system, like the railgun. Yeah, the railgun's going to be great until something's found that disables the railgun. Okay, right. Hypersonic missiles. Yeah, until something's found that jams something and knocks the hypersonic missile down. You know, that renders the engine inert. That does something that modifies it in flight. So, and it has been going on since David picked up a slingshot and smoked Goliath in the head. Right. Everybody that was watching it said, "Hey, man, I got to get a helmet." And not a leather helmet. Can we make it? What's stronger than leather? Well, metal, but I've never seen a metal helmet. Wouldn't it be uncomfortable on your head? Well, yeah, but let's put it like a leather headband in it. Oh, now we got a metal helmet. Yeah, where's that little punk, David? Bring his ass over here now. See what he's got. All right. David pulls out his bow, right through the heart. Yeah, take that, bitch. So, anyway. Yeah, the March of Weapons. So pretty interesting that, you know, that there was one bullet and it was pretty standard. You could change the caliber, but we tended only to design the gun and then the bullet. And as Mike said, it's the bullet. Build the gun around the bullet. Interesting. No, you know what? It's cool having him on because not only because we're friends, but he is when you get him like dorking out on his gun stuff. Yeah, pretty interesting. And let me tell you what, I don't know too many guys. I don't know anybody that knows more about guns than he does. But it's fun when people, like, think they do. That's a pretty interesting little event. Oh! So you want me to believe blah, 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 blah. Yeah, funny. All right, that'll do it for a Tuesday. If you're just tuning in, don't touch that dial. Hour one, somebody sent me an email last week. What's your favorite part about All Marine Radio? And I gave that, I answered that in hour one. Hour two, you're going to hear a speech that Secretary Mattis gave at the Naval War College. He essentially throws Russia under the bus, talks about Vladimir Putin, the threat that he poses to Western democracies and how he's going about attempting to compromise them. So you'll hear that. It's also in that speech is one of the funniest things I've ever heard Secretary Mattis say. And if I were to tee it up for you again, I won't right now, but he's coughing and he does it repeatedly. And somebody puts a bottle of water on the podium next to him. And he turns around, kind of smiles, turns around, looks to see who did it, says, "Thank you." And he says, "If this was vodka, this would be a hell of a lot better speech." And the whole place falls apart laughing. And he laughs, and he drinks some water. And then he says, "No, I'm not supposed to glorify alcohol. Everybody who's all you young people out there, forget what I just said." So it's very funny. He can be. He's not a funny person by nature. He's got a good sense of humor, though. But most of the time, I mean, it was among Marines, Marine-type humor, you know, behind closed doors. Out in public, he's a very measured person. He knows he's constantly scrutinized, or at least since I've known him, he's been like that. And so he's pretty, and he's learned, he's had to learn to be, he hasn't always been, he's had to learn to be a little bit more circumspect with his humor. If you recall, I think the audio of him saying, either it's fun to kill those guys, or they need killing, something like that, in a forum after he came back from his time as the division commander. Yeah, that did not play well in Peoria. We all understand it, but Peoria tends not to understand. And then the gunner, we talk about the truth and democracy, things like that. And that starts gun talk, and that goes on for about 30 minutes. And then after that, we actually do gun talk, which goes on for a while. So thanks for listening on a Tuesday. All Marine Radio over, and I'll have a great one.